After understanding about motivation, motivational theories, and the application of motivation in the organization to achieve the organizational goals, let's understand a further concept in HRM, HR management, that is foundation and understanding of employee teams. Up till now, we have been learning about an individual employee, how they are going to behave. We understood about their behavior in the form of the interpretation of the behavior, the understanding of the behavior, and finally managing that. And we also understood about how they can be motivated at individual level. With this, let's understand about the further concept of employees in the organization in the form of groups rather than only the individuals. So we are going to learn about groups and employee teams in the organization in this topic. What is a group? A group is one where two or more people come together who are interdependent, who are independent most of the time at times, and who are interacting with each other, or who may be interdependent and they are interacting with each other to achieve a common goal for all. And a team will be totally bound by the organization, made by the organization, where a formally they are going to work together either in the department or in the self-managed team, etc. So we are going to learn about understanding what are groups, how they are developed, what are the properties of the group. We are going to understand what are teams, how they differ from work groups. We also learn the different types of teams in the form of self-managed team, problem-solving team, etc. We are going to find out what are the various factors that can make the teams effective. We also would learn what are the drawbacks of teams and how the employees in the team, they communicate with each other and to the external world. And we'll also learn about their leadership in the team, how a leader should be, what are the various theories of leadership in the team, and how a successful leader will make the team work coherently and achieve the organizational goals. So let's understand about groups, their properties, and decision making. As we know, groups are two or more people who are interdependent and they are going to come together to work towards a common purpose or common goal. They can be formal groups or there can be informal groups. Formal groups are made by organization, while informal groups are made by individuals because of their common interest in a particular thing. Say, suppose your office is in one suburb or is in proper city, and there are multiple people coming from various suburbs to that city to work together. They may be working in different departments. So those who are staying on the western side of the suburbs of this city, they come together in the same train. They may be staying at different stations, but they come together daily together. Automatically, they become conversant with each other, they communicate with each other, even though they are working in different departments, and it will lead to the formation of an informal group where they can meet together to have a cup of tea, or sometimes they can go for the picnic together And that's how informally, because of the common location where they are going from different destinations which are on the same route, or because of their love for music, old songs or whatever, a particular hobby. Say they all love cricket, they all love football, and that's how they come together and then start playing these games on the Sundays or some vacations and all, holidays and all. And it will lead to formation of an informal group. How the groups are formed? What are the stages of group formation? In most of the group formation, there are four stages, say forming, storming, norming and performing, while some of the groups are going to dismantle after their purpose is over, and for them it can be even adjourning will be the fifth stage of group formation. So let's understand what are these stages of group formation. First and foremost is forming. Initially some people either formally by the organization or informally because of their common interest or common purpose, they will think of forming a group. So maybe one or two friends will come together and they feel, let us form our group and do certain activities. It can be for the social work like in Lions or Rotarians etc. also we have seen. So first they start forming a group. They invite certain common friends who are of the same hobbies and have a formal meeting among them and then start developing the concept of forming a group. Then comes storming. Now the interest of individual person will come and somebody will say that I would like to become a leader of this, president of this group, somebody will say I would like to be a secretary of group. So the storming will be there. Somebody, two, three people may say that no, I want to become leader and these are my qualities, these are my experiences which will help us in forming this group and performing and doing certain activities for the group for the common purpose. So there is going to be some clashes, some conflicts during this storming group. And then comes norming, where people have started settling their conflicts. They have decided somebody to be the leader of this group, somebody to be the organizing secretary of this group, somebody to take care of certain aspects of this, and that's how norming of the group will start occurring. Once the conflicts are settled down, people have decided the roles and responsibilities to be taken by individual members of this group, they start performing. And then they start performing certain activities of the group. Maybe if it's a musical group, they will think of organizing a program where their talents will be identified and they will be given a task of singing one song each, or whoever are a little more conversant with this, they will perform in that. Or maybe they can call some professional in this, they can invite certain people from orchestra and start performing these things. And finally, some of the groups, when over a period of time the interest of some people goes away because either it's not working that well, or some of them are transferred to other city for the job purpose or something, and then at times this group gradually disintegrates, and a day comes when the total group is adjourned. So adjourning will be the final stage of such groups where they are totally stopped working. So let's understand about group norms. These are the agreed behavioral principles that are followed by all the group members in the group. Here there are certain common norms that lay down clear indications about how much hard work a person is supposed to do, what should be the level of output, what are the ways of doing the various tasks, and there are certain norms regarding dress code also, and social arrangement norms such as who should have lunch with whom, and resource allocation norms such as distribution of resources like what will be the equipments used by various people, how much salary should be given to the manager who is going to look after the group activities and all that. So that's the norms one has to follow. Then conformity should be such where people being in the group have to conform to the group norms, and individual experience immense pressure to transform their attitudes and behavior in order to conform to the group norms. The key reasons for conformity will be need to have accurate view of reality as per the group consensus. One should develop a meaningful social relationship and maintain a favorable self-perception among themselves in the group that they are members of. So, group status is a socially defined position where people have pride in becoming the member of a particular group, say Rotarians. Anybody cannot become a Rotarian. Some Rotary group member has to nominate somebody, then only he can become a Rotarian. That means there is a pride in becoming a Rotarian. So, when a group status is there, which defines socially for a particular status, and hence people love to become the member of such a group. Now, as far as the group size is concerned, large groups can be of 12 and smaller groups can be of 7. Well, what's the importance of this group size? Wherever there is a group which has been formed for problem solving, we may need multiple opinions to come to a conclusion, in which case a larger group may be good, where we can get multiple ideas from highly experienced people from various fields. But as far as the performance of the group is concerned, many times a smaller group up to 6 to 7 are better, since people will be more committed to do in a smaller group, rather than, you know, groupism among the group may occur if it's a larger group. Then a concept of social loafing is one where when a person is individual, he has got all the responsibilities and accountability to do the work, while when a person is working in a group, he will feel that somebody else will do, and so I can take little rest or I will avoid doing it, nobody will come to know. So that's a social loafing which should be avoided, and everybody should be given a proper kind of role to be played by him, and accountability should be there. As far as the group cohesiveness is concerned, it is very important to achieve the results. If different people have got different opinions about what should be done, if there is a lot of interpersonal communication conflict which is occurring, then lot of time is wasted in arriving at a conclusion, what should be done, how it is to be done and all that, and then the group cannot perform well and the results cannot be achieved. So cohesiveness can be enhanced by small group. If there is a small group, there won't be multiple groups among the groups to be formed and having different opinions and then making coalitions and coming against each other. So smaller group is always better for cohesiveness. There should be common agreement on group objective by all of them, and it should be done at the beginning of the performance so that people know exactly what is expected, and so they can work in a better way to achieve the results. One should increase the time spent by all. Otherwise, if some group members say that I am so busy in my business that I don't have time for this kind of social activity now, so I am not going to come for the group meeting. Unless you increase the time spent by each for meeting, arriving at the decisions what is next to be done, how to perform, and then really spending that much of time to get the results of that, it will be difficult for people to get the objectives of the or the common purpose for which the group is formed. So one should increase the time spent, one should enhance the group status so that people are proud to be members of this group, and one should encourage inter-group competition in which a person will have a more motivation to achieve better results for their own group. and there should be group rewards to be given, whereby people will feel that whatever we are going to do, we are going to get some rewards out of it, so they will be more motivated to work in a better way. One should physically isolate the group in such a way that it is not going to clash with other group activity, and one should have one common purpose for the whole group. And there is a concept of group think, where suppose in the group there are say 10 people, out of which 2 people are highly dominant because of their position, because of their financial resources, or because of their liaisoning activity which are important for the group performance. In that case, they may have higher say in what they want to do, and then the other people try to follow that, and even though sometimes they are taking wrong decisions, usually other people are also going towards continuing with that decision, and that's a group thing which should be avoided. And to avoid that kind of group thing, one should not be very dominant in their activities. Rather than everybody's opinion should be taken independently, and then consensus should be having a proper thought process, and if required, even somebody should act as a devil's advocate to oppose the idea of one or two dominant people, and then everybody should think about what is right and what is wrong, and then arrive at a proper decision. So group decision making technique. There are various techniques which are used for making the decisions in a group. One is interacting group, second is brainstorming, third is nominal group technique, and the fourth can be electronic meeting. Now what is interacting group? Here the group people come together, interact with each other, put forward what exactly is to be done, how it is to be done. Of course, it's a time consuming thing, but everybody's opinion should be counted, and the leader of the group should enhance everybody to participate in that. They should interact fully and find out the pros and cons of doing certain things and have the proper perspective of all the decisions taken for the group performance. So interacting group is something which is very good for decision making, but it can be time consuming, and if all the members are not having equal interest in really doing work for the group, then it can be something where group think also can be taking unnecessarily the dominant people having their say to a great extent. Then comes brainstorming. Brainstorming is a very good technique, especially in case of problem solving, where a group of say 7 to 8 people from the whole group can sit around the table, and a facilitator can stand near the board having a pen, have the marker pen to write down on the board regarding all the ideas given by the various members without discriminating anybody because of the position of the person, or because of the better liaisoning work, or because of the higher performance earlier or anything. Everybody should be given equal opportunity to give their ideas. Those ideas should be noted down without anybody's criticism, without further discussing the ideas initially, and then one should go with each and every idea, and everybody should discuss regarding those ideas, which can be weird at times, which can be sometimes looking impossible also, but still these ideas should be jotted down, and every idea should be discussed in detail regarding their feasibility, regarding their pros and cons, and then finally one should arrive at the one or two important ideas, and further one should deliberate on these things and then come to conclusion of what should be done. Then there is a nominal group technique, where people are nominated to take care of certain ideas, discuss, having written down each and every idea individually without any discussion initially. Then these things are told by the facilitator to everybody, then everybody comes to a conclusion later based on everybody's idea, and finally consensus is made. And then comes electronic meeting, where people are not actually meeting with each other, they are at their home, the things are being sent by email or by messages, and then they are working on it, and they are crisscrossing to each other and then they are coming at a conclusion as a consensus afterwards. Of course, it's going to be a bit time consuming. So let's understand what is a team then. We have understood about what is a group. A team is a formalized thing usually in the organization where the top management is going to tell that these are the people who are going to form a team for a particular purpose and they are going to work towards it. So let's understand what are the differences between work group and work team. The objective of work group is basically sharing of information, while work team usually collectively perform towards a common purpose given by the top management. It is absolutely standardized. The team members are usually chosen by the top management that these are the people who will be taking part in this particular team. One can say team is together, everybody achieves more. Where there is going to be synergism in the activities of the team. So, as far as the ownership is concerned, there is a limited ownership as low commitment may occur in the group tasks where people are not formally meeting and there is no accountability for everybody. So, ownership will be limited. While in case of work team, there is going to be a strong feeling of ownership and high commitment towards the team task. As far as the synergy is concerned, it can be neutral or sometimes negative in case of a group, while in case of work team, it is going to be positive where 1 plus 1 can become 11 also. As far as the interdependence is concerned, it can be low in case of group where they operate highly disconnected with each other. Based on that availability of time, they are going to come in the meeting and all. While in case of work team, the interdependence also is very high because people are dependent on each other for achieving the common goal of the organization. And there is high degree of coordination required in work team to achieve the goals. As far as the formal structure is concerned, there is no clearly defined roles. And the behavioral norms are also not absolutely clearly defined. Some people may behave differently because of their status, because of their clout, because of the coalition that they are having. While in case of work team, usually since it is made formally by the organization, they have got clearly defined role, who is going to do what, which kind of work will be taken care of, which person of this team, how they are going to achieve, how often they are going to meet, how they are going to take care of any problems that come across, how they will be supported by the top management if required, or whether it will be a self-managed team where they will be managing on their own because of their professionalism that they are having, that they have been chosen as a members, and there are going to be clear-cut behavioral norms. This is how a person is supposed to behave. As far as the accountability is concerned, in a group also still it is more of an individual accountability, while in case of team it is not only individual but a mutual accountability will be there for all the team members, and hence they will be more committed to achieve the goals. In case of the work group, the skills and abilities can be random or varied, while in case of work team we are going to have complementary skills and abilities so that one can achieve the team goal for the organization. So what are the various types of teams usually formed in the organization? There can be problem solving teams, there can be self-managed work teams, there are cross-functional teams and there are virtual teams. Let's understand about each in some detail. Well, what's the problem solving team? Whenever there is a problem to be solved, which is not possible for one person to do that, the senior manager is going to form a problem solving team where based on the problem that is there, they are going to select certain people who can contribute in solving this problem with different ideas. There can be diverse kind of people who will be taken in this problem solving team so that we can get the benefit of their experience in arriving at the solution. They will be meeting periodically based on the requirement. They will discuss exactly what is the problem. They are going to find out the rational way of solving this problem by arriving at multiple alternative solutions to solve this problem. They are going to discuss about the pros and cons of each alternative, the feasibility of each alternative for solving this problem, taking into consideration various aspects, and then arrive at the consensus of having one particular alternative which is best to solve this problem. They are going to implement that and then see the result of that, and if required, they can, if it is not working, they may think of going for another solution, another alternative. One of the problem solving team can be the quality circle, which was the concept developed by Americans and mainly used more in Japan, where a group of people in the department, in the same department, come together once in 15 days, put forward their own problems, and then try to get the solution, and then they refer this to the higher management, where the facilitator is going to help them in developing the PPT, and then an opportunity for them to put forward this problem and its solution, where if the top management feels that it is right, they can provide the right resources to solve this problem. Then there are self-managed work teams, where the whole team is given autonomy, where they are going to manage the whole work or the whole purpose for which the team is formed, where multiple people from different fields may come and they are going to sort out this project or the work that is given to this team, and they are going to manage the whole thing on their own. They need not go to the top management for that. Sufficient resources are given, finance is given. They can find out their own solutions. They can take the advantage of certain consultants from outside if required, and finally they are managing the whole work by themselves. Then there is a cross-functional team where the experts from various functions come together for doing certain project work or for getting some purpose solved, achieved for the organization, where maybe one person is from, say, maintenance department, one person is from operation department, one person is from HR, one person is from facility management, one person is from safety, etc. And based on the type of project that is there, and cross-functional team can sit together, work for this particular purpose, and achieve the results in much better way by their expertise in various functional aspects. Then there are virtual teams where they are not coming together at one place to meet, but they are sitting at their own offices or home, where virtually through the email, through the video conferencing, etc., they are meeting often, finding out the, deciding about what should be done and how it should be done, and then arriving at the solutions and doing their respective work, and then communicating with each other virtually through the computers and all, and getting the results. So let's understand what are the various factors which are responsible for effectiveness of the teams. First and foremost, the management should give adequate resources to the team members so that they can achieve the results they need. To function, everybody needs the resources, maybe in the form of stationery, equipment, machines, finance, the right kind of liaising people, facilitating their work, etc. So that adequate resources are very important for effectiveness of team. There should be a good leader, and there should be proper structure of the team whereby the individual member should know what exactly is his role and responsibility. The facilitating person should look into the overall facilitating the whole project. The maintenance person, engineer, should see to it that all the maintenance of the equipments, the structure of the building or the factory where it is there, where they are going to work in the project, has to be taken care of. Housekeeping has to be taken care of, fire hazard should be taken care of, etc. The operating person is going to look into the right quality products and services to be provided and how it is going to be manufactured, etc. The safety person is going to look after all the safety precautions. The liaisoning person is going to take care of all the government laws and liaisoning work to be done for arriving at the earliest all the requirement of the project to be performed. So proper leadership and structure has to be there. The leader has to facilitate everybody's work and guide them and support them with all the resources and with all the expertise. As far as the performance evaluation and reward system is concerned, one has to periodically evaluate the performance with the help of Gantt charts or with the help of the PERT and CRM techniques, etc. And one has to reward the team members based on their work. One should look into the competence of each and every member and train them if required with the help of the right consultants to enhance their competencies. One should look into the personality of every member, and based on the personality he should be given the work of the team. An extrovert person should be given the marketing job or the liaisoning job or the PRO job, etc. for the team. A conscientious and open to suggestions a person should be taking care of the top management role in the team or leadership role, who facilitates, who has got inadequate knowledge about various functions, and one should allocate different roles to different people based on their expertise, and one should have a diversity of members so that they can give us better inputs regarding the solution of the problems that may arise in the teamwork whenever we have got any problem. Because of the different kind of expertise, say somebody is in structural engineering, somebody is in safety, somebody is in health, somebody is in liaisoning work, so that whatever is needed for the teamwork in the project, we can have the right expertise available and they can give creative solutions to this kind of problems and the team can perform well. The size of the team should be adequate in the form of, say, 8 to 10 people, so that it is going to distribute the work properly and there should not be a subgroups of the teams and they should work coherently among themselves.